Welcome everyone to Are You Still Afraid? Horror and Pop Culture Show. My name is Phil Thomas. I'm the national best-selling author of The Poe Predicament. I formerly co-hosted a popular podcast with writer T. Fox Dunham called What Are You Afraid Of? That started, well, almost exactly 10 years ago in October of 2015. And here we are, closing in on the summer of 2025. I can't believe a decade has gone by already. I don't know where those 10 years went. We interviewed many notable guests, including Lloyd Kaufman, Joe R. Lansdale, Grady Hendrix, Greg Bear, Daniel Krauss, and many more, which also included paranormal investigator Katrina Weidman, who was on several shows, including Paranormal State, Paranormal Lockdown, and she did Portals to Hell, and is currently on Haunted Salem Live. She did both of those with Ozzy Osbourne's son, Jack Osbourne. That being said, I need to take a moment to remember Mr. Ozzy Osbourne, because he had such a profound impact on my life, starting in middle school, pretty much up until now. There just will never be another one like him, and I remember, you know, going into those record stores, tape stores, Sam Goody, getting those CDs and those tapes, and even the occasional vinyl of Black Sabbath and his early stuff, you know, early solo stuff, you know, Bark at the Moon, and yeah, I mean, for the last several weeks, I've been just listening to a lot of Ozzy and a lot of Black Sabbath, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels the same way, obviously. And I watched some of the funeral procession, and that was, you know, that was very, in my opinion, very emotional. So I would like to talk about this particular show and the formats. We'll be talking about movies, books, music, all with a little bit of an underlying horror and paranormal theme, because, you know, everyone that's I'm going to have on the show, as far as a co-host goes, we're all pretty much horror fans. I think every single one, actually, when I think about it. I will be the constant on the show, which means every episode, I will be the constant host. But there are going to be multiple co-hosts, a rotation, including writer and actor Ryan McGinley, writer and filmmaker Matthew Brooks, his brother, artist and special effects artist Stephen Brooks, actor Jamie McCarney, and horror author and sci-fi author Ryan Wynn, horror artist Mike Walder, and many others. There's going to be a lot to come. So, you know, this is only the first episode, so, you know, I'm just getting started. As many alternate hosts as the show will have, today there is only one, and that's me. So, you know, I just would like to talk about what I hope the show is going to be. You know, and I would like to kind of recapture what was done 10 years ago, because the show ran for 5 years and over 150 episodes. So I don't know if that's going to happen this time. In fact, I mean, What Are You Afraid Of? Horror and Paranormal Show was only supposed to be for the 2015 Halloween season, ended up going for 5 years. So this particular show here, Are You Still Afraid, is something that I'm kind of planning on doing just as an experiment from now until the end of the Halloween season. And I would like to use it as a springboard, a platform, just kind of talk about horror authors. I'd like to have some guests on if possible. I would like to do some book reviews, some movie reviews, and just talk about the different projects that my co-hosts and I are working on. And keep it light, keep it fun. Again, celebrate the season of Halloween 2025 season. That's what we want to do. We want to have fun. So at this moment, I'd like to ask the listeners to please send us your ghost stories. You know, true ghost stories, any kind of paranormal thing that has happened to you. Also, if you're an author, send us some flash fiction, short stories, and we will feature them on here. We will have a narrator, either myself or someone else, to narrate your story, and we will showcase it on the show here. I just ask that you try to limit it to a maximum of two typed pages. And if you could please send them over to areyoustillafraid13@gmail.com. areyoustillafraid13@gmail.com. So I would like to discuss my upcoming book. I have a novel coming out next spring, spring of 2026, which I'm very excited about, being published by Foundations Books. And I can't wait to share this story with the world. It's the story of Drake Teller, a family man who is dealing with a terminally ill diagnosis of his 8-year-old daughter, Chloe. As he and his wife seek life-saving treatment, Drake is the one who dies and ends up in hell on a technicality, an injustice due entirely to the reason he doesn't belong there. At the relatively young age of 34, he is ripped from his family on an early February morning when a patch of ice causes his car to careen off the road and flip onto an adjacent playground. The business analyst now calls hell his permanent residence. However, he is offered a chance at redemption and to save his terminally ill daughter by entering the Halo Run competition, a contest that pits hundreds of contestants together on October 31st. The winner is granted a do-over, another life, and a chance to save their loved one. As Drake embarks on the contest, he returns to Earth in human form to begin the journey. But before the contest ends and November 1st arrives, Drake will uncover something of unexpected importance. His death was not an accident, and he must confront his own killer before time runs out. A deceased father, determined to save his terminally ill daughter, returns to Earth for one full day and a chance at redemption. So, in my opinion, Worst Afterlife Ever captures the afterlife quirkiness of Beetlejuice and the frantic competition of Ready Player One. Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Dungeon Crawler Carl by Matt Dinneman. And it will be available next spring of 2026. So, had to get that promotion in there. So, depending on your part of the world, you're most likely in the midst of summer, the dog days, and I can attest that it's been an especially hot one here in Philadelphia. As a result, I've been finding myself looking forward to the cooler weather just a bit. The sweater weather, campfires, roasting of marshmallows, horror movies, haunted hayrides, and maybe the occasional paranormal investigation. Who knows? It could happen. When I was doing What Are You Afraid Of? Horror and Paranormal Show, we would broadcast on location at many haunted locales and attractions, such as Fort Mifflin and Pennhurst Penitentiary. My goal here is to hopefully continue that experience, especially during the Halloween season. So, to help us get in the spirit of Ben, to also have it as our very first ghost story for the new podcast. To start it off right, I'd like to share a story that my mom recorded for the other show many years ago. She is, unfortunately, no longer with us, having passed in June of 2021. But I think she did a wonderful job. It's called The Spinning Ghost of Pineapple Hill, written by author P.C. Kasich, based on her own experiences in New Hope. Here it is, and we'll be back.
The Spinning Ghost of the Pineapple Hill Inn, Bed and Breakfast, New Hope, PA. Read by Patricia Thomas. This will be about the spinning ghost at the Pineapple Hill Inn, Bed and Breakfast. But I actually have to start a year earlier. I was in Philadelphia for a writing convention when a friend asked if I'd like to visit some place called New Hope. He said it was a quaint, artsy town on the Delaware and thought I'd enjoy it. I said I would love to. And so begins the adventure. New Hope was quaint, and at the time, this would be in the late 90s, before Dunkin' Donuts and the Mondo condos moved in. Very much an artsy type of town, but there was something else about it. For some reason, it felt like home. Now, I had never been to Pennsylvania before, None of my family had lived in Pennsylvania, that I know of. But from the moment I got out of the car, I felt like I had lived in New Hope my entire life. My friend was taken somewhat aback when, instead of having him show me the points of interest, I showed him. He even accused me of lying to him about having never been there before, because obviously I knew the place. We were crossing South Main Street at the time, and I was just about to tell him I had never been there, then when I suddenly stopped moving in the middle of the street. I didn't hear the squeal of brakes or the blare of car horns, and I don't think I knew. I realized I was holding up traffic until my friend grabbed my arm and hurled me onto the sidewalk. He asked me what the hell happened, and I told him I had just thought of the plot for a novel set in New Hope. Beginning, middle, end. With character names, and here's the twist. I told him ghost stories because my New Hope, the one I had just thought up in my mind, I thought was haunted. That's when he again accused me of pulling his leg about having never been there before, because he told me New Hope was haunted. Seriously? Yes, he was. And he even showed me a couple of books in Farley's bookstore, Ghosts in the Valley and More Ghosts in the Valley by Addie Kent Thomas Jeffrey. Now, I love ghost stories and stories about real hauntings, but for some reason that I figured out later, I didn't buy either book. I would later, but that part's still to come. Now, back to my second novel idea. For the rest of the afternoon, I couldn't get the plot out of my head. The only trouble was that I felt I needed to be in New Hope in order to write it, and that was going to be a problem. I lived in Colorado. My sons were still in school, and most importantly, I had very limited funds. There was no way I could afford to live in New Hope at that moment in time, but it didn't stop me from writing down plot points and stories about the ghosts that haunted my New Hope. But those notes and stories were the only things I could write. The novel just sat in the back of my mind, waiting. I thought it would have to wait forever. Just one more book that never gets written. But then things happened. A story of mine was up for a World Fantasy Award. And while at another convention, this time in Rhode Island, a man, tall, good-looking, wearing white shorts and a white shirt, ghost-like, suddenly appeared and asked if I was going to attend that year's World Fantasy Convention. It wasn't until later that I discovered he was one of the judges. My story won, by the way. I told him I was going to attend, and we small talked for another few minutes, and then he asked what my next writing project was. Usually, I would give a very brief description of whatever story I happened to be working on at that moment. But this time, I told the man in white about the novel I wanted to write that would be set in New Hope, Pennsylvania. The man said, "Oh, I know New Hope. My brother owns a house there that has a basement apartment. I'll tell him about you." I thought he was just being nice and put the whole thing out of my mind until, months later, the man in white, who I came to know as Peter Schnoder, called and said, "Great news! My brother's tenant died, and you can have the apartment for a couple of months." I still honestly don't know how, but I packed up my computer, some furniture, clothes, and headed for New Hope, where I spent the next 7 months writing the novel that almost got me killed on Main Street. The novel still sits next to my desk, waiting after all these years for a final edit. But I think it was just a catalyst. One of the first things I did when I got into town was go to Farley's and buy those two books. I also took the ghost tour and discovered that the stories I'd written in Colorado for my novel were very similar to the ones I'd read in the book and heard on the tour. I really can't explain that any more than I can about why I feel so much at home there. I just think New Hope sometimes has that effect on people. Okay, that's the backstory. Prologue. I was home in Colorado when I got a call from a man named Rob Child, who told me he was going to make a documentary on New Hope, America's most haunted town. Luminance Films, 2001. And after having read some of my accounts of ghostly encounters in the New Hope online blog, asked if I'd be interested in being part of it. Of course, that meant I'd have to move back to New Hope for a month or so. I told him I'd love to do it, but didn't know if it would be possible. The home situation had not changed. Plus, I knew the apartment I had rented before had some new tenants. I said I'd think about it and get back to him. It wasn't a week later that Peter Schneider's brother, Chris, called to let me know the apartment was vacant and would be for a month or so, and asked if I had any plans on coming back to New Hope. I'm not saying there was anything supernatural about this turn of events, but the timing was pretty remarkable, don't you think? And there I was back in New Hope, about to participate in a documentary about its ghosts and having more fun than I thought was humanly possible. So when Rob asked if I'd be willing to spend a night at a haunted inn, I jumped at the chance. The Pineapple Hill Inn Bed and Breakfast is just a few miles south of New Hope and has its share of ghosts. I didn't know it was haunted, but I had seen the inn a number of times on my trips up and down River Road, and each time I passed, I slowed down and stared up at the small window on the third floor just beneath the peak of the roof. I don't know why, or at least I didn't, until Rob told me that was the room I'd be spending the night in. The room haunted by the sounds of a spinning wheel. Well, it wasn't a headless monk or the kissing bandit who haunts the halls and the room directly beneath the one I was in, and who occasionally wakes ladies with a kiss on the cheek, but it was the room I seemed to be drawn to, so that had to count for something. That night, when we arrived, as in all the best gothic ghost stories, it was dark and stormy. And after taking a tour where I found out I'd be the only guest in the original front section of the inn, we shot a little footage for the documentary in the Kissing Bandit's room. While filming, we all heard someone walk up the hall and stop at the room's door. Of course, there was no one there when I opened the door, but we did capture the sound on the video. After filming, Rob left. The innkeepers retired to their house on the other side of the inn's back patio, and I, alone, went up the long, narrow back stairs, the original servants' stairs, to my room. Was I scared? No, I wasn't. However, before retiring, I did open my door, and looking down the long, dark staircase, asked that no one, kissing bandit or not, come calling. I'm not sure what I would have done if I had heard someone coming upstairs that night. I've seen recent pictures of the room on the inn's website, and the new innkeepers have done it proud. It's gorgeous. Not that it wasn't when I stayed there, but it is changed. Now, there are two bedrooms with the bath, dressing room in between. When I was there, it was a one-bedroom, which you entered from the stairs, and a cozy living TV room you entered through the dressing area after shutting the door, and yes, locking it, I set down my overnight bag, and with the rain beating against the roof overhead, I walked over to the window I had only seen from the road and started looking out of it for a few minutes. Since I wasn't particularly sleepy, I decided to watch a little TV before retiring. There was a spinning wheel in the room for decor, but it obviously was not the original or even an antique. Rob had given a video camera and audio recorder. This was back before much of the really neat paranormal investigation equipment was readily available, which I was to set up before going to bed. So I put them on the coffee table facing the imposter spinning wheel, in case something happened while I was awake, I'd be able to reach over and turn both on, then settle back on the sofa. While some gangster movie provided background noise, I was putting down some ideas for a story in a notepad, the old-fashioned paper kind, when I suddenly couldn't breathe. Not only could I not catch my breath, but my heart was racing, and my face was literally dripping with sweat. But as strange as this may sound, I was absolutely calm. It was almost as if I was just watching what was happening and not a part of it. I even made a note of that. Very strange. Can't breathe. Not scared. As well as the time. About 11:45. Then just sat there, scribbling about what I was experiencing until some 10 or 15 minutes later, as suddenly as it had started, it stopped. And it was as if nothing had happened. My breathing was normal. My heart no longer felt like it was trying to pound its way out of my chest, and my face and forehead were dry to the touch. What the heck just happened? I wanted to see if it, whatever it had been, would happen again, but it didn't. It was almost an hour later when I turned off the TV, turned on the camera and recorder, and went to bed. Now, let's be honest. Given where I was and what had just happened to me, you'd think I'd be a tad nervous about shutting my eyes, let alone going to sleep, wouldn't you? But that wasn't the case. With the sound of rain hitting the roof and the window, but not anything that sounded like a spinning wheel, I fell asleep almost immediately. Sometime later, I woke in the dark to what sounded very much like the whirr of a spinning wheel. I would have gotten up and tiptoed into the living room to see what was going on, but I couldn't move, and so I wasn't dreaming. I was wide and lying flat on my back, my left arm bent at the elbow, left hand curled under my chin, and right arm was straight at my side, and my entire body felt numb. I couldn't so much as wiggle my toes or turn my head to see the time on the bedside clock. And while I should have been terrified, I wasn't. As with the previous incident in the TV room, I was absolutely calm. I just lay there, staring up into the dark and listening to the whirring sound that had awakened me. There was nothing much else I could do at the moment. I tried to think of a rational explanation for the sound and finally decided it was the sound of the room's forced air heater kicking on. I wasn't surprised that people had mistaken that for the sound of a haunted spinning wheel. When you're staying the night in a room and know it's supposed to be haunted, you will naturally assume any sound that's out of the ordinary will be the sound you'd expect to hear. Case closed. Mystery solved. Oh, yawn. Oh, yawn. I fell back to sleep, but later woke again to the whirring sound, which this time, however, the sound seemed louder, as though the spinning wheel was at the foot of the bed. And once again, I could only lay there and listen in the same position I had been when I woke the first time, my body numb. But I was still sure about what I was hearing. "Yeah," I said out loud, "it's the heater," and fell asleep. The third time I woke up, same position, the whirring sound was loud. So loud, in fact, that I yelled, "Okay, okay, I hear you," and went back to sleep. The next morning, I woke up to a bright day, curled up on my left side, and got out of bed just as the room's heater came on. It wasn't the same sound I had heard the night before. Oops. Naturally, I had to apologize. "I'm sorry," I said to the empty room. "I made a mistake. I did hear you." After making amends, I checked the video camera and recorder in the living room. The video showed the spinning wheel hadn't moved all night, and the only sound you hear on the recorder is me saying, "Okay, okay, I hear you," and my apology, but not the whirring sound. After I dressed and packed, I picked up the room's guest comments book from the mantelpiece above the room's gas fireplace and flipped through the pages while I waited for Rob to come and collect me. Besides glowing reports on the inn and food, a number of guests commented that occasionally the air in the TV room suddenly seemed to get stuffy and thick. Around midnight, others wrote only on the beauty and peacefulness of the room. But almost all of them wrote of hearing a soft, whirring sound in the night. None of the comments mentioned that the sound got louder and seemingly closer. But I think that was only for my benefit, since I had tried to dismiss it. When Rob arrived, I told him what happened, and while making our way down the back stairs, was just coming to the part about feeling as if I couldn't breathe, when I reached out and grabbed the newel post on the first landing. The moment my hand touched it was an instant replay of the previous night. I couldn't breathe. My heart began racing, and I must have looked like I was going to pass out, because Rob asked if I was okay. As I was gasping for breath, I told him this was exactly what I'd experienced the night before and stepped back to lean against the wall. The moment I took my hand off the newel post, however, I was fine. My breathing returned to normal, and my heart stopped racing. It was literally as if someone had thrown a switch. I touched the newel post again and immediately began gasping. I let go, and I was fine. So, what happened? Here's what I think. The woman who occupied the room originally was a servant and spinner who suffered from consumption, which is tuberculosis. Besides spinning, she may have also been a maid, servant girl. I had the feeling she was young, who would have naturally used the back stairs. The stairs are steep, and for someone whose breathing was already compromised, she'd probably have to stop and catch her breath on the landing and hold onto the newel post to steady herself. The spinner died in her room, in her bed, perhaps flat on her back, with her right arm at her side and her left crooked at the elbow, with her hand tucked under her chin. Can I prove this? No. Did I really hear what have been a spinning wheel? I heard something. Do I think the room was haunted? Yes. Is it possible that I only imagined experiencing the physical manifestations? Perhaps, but this sort of thing has happened to me before. I don't see dead people, usually, but sometimes it seems I become them.
I'm so glad that I have that piece of recording from her. It's She just did such a great job. It's very surreal to listen to, and it saddens me that she is not here to record anything else for us. But I know that she would if she could. But we're, you know, I believe in the afterlife and paranormal, and I believe she's, you know, here with me, listening, watching, and hey, maybe she's even recording something on the other side as we speak. Who knows? But since this is a pop culture show, we're talking about books we're reading, movies we're watching. I would like to speak about the books I'm reading right now. I actually just finished Boys in the Valley by Philip Fracassi. I thought it was great. You know, I read it pretty quickly, and I thought it was one of those things that's a claustrophobic. I got a claustrophobic feeling from it because it takes place over the course of a winter time in a boys' home. There's a guest that arrives, and he is obviously possessed, and he's obviously got some issues, many, many issues, and some things go awry. I, without giving away too many spoilers, I just want to say that, you know, some pretty horrific things happen, and then things start to go kind of oddly in the home. Boys start acting strange, and things go downhill pretty quickly. They go downhill pretty fast. And I love the characters. I thought they were fleshed out very well. As a writer myself, I could see the landscape, the surroundings, the home, the interiors. Each boy, in my opinion, had a distinct personality. I could decipher them pretty well. So I do recommend that book. I highly recommend it. I'll give it 4.5 stars. Ironically, now I just started recently reading Grady Hendrick's new book, who I interviewed with Fox on the last podcast. What Are You Afraid Of? We interviewed Grady Hendrick's when he was promoting the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, and that was a great interview. And it's still online; you can check it out. And but I'm reading his newest book, Witchcraft for Wayward Girls. I can't give a book review of it because I'm still in the midst of reading it. But I find it ironic somewhat that I went from reading a book about a boy's home to reading a book about essentially a girl's home. I didn't plan that. That's just kind of how it happened. But the it's about a home where wayward girls go to basically have their babies. These teenage girls go there. It takes place in the summer of 1970, which I think is very cool because I like anything that takes place. I like period stuff. So, and this is a group of teenage girls who are there to deliver their babies, and then most of them, I guess, give them up for adoption and go back to their lives as if nothing happened. But I am enjoying it very much so far. I can recommend it so far. I will give a full review after I'm finished reading it, but I'm enjoying it very much so far, and I'm burning through it. So, and I've read everything he's done, and I've always liked his stuff very much. So, I can't recommend any of his stuff enough, from Horror Store to My Best Friend's Exorcism. So, a trilogy that came out in the last year or so, and that's the X trilogy by Ty West, and if anyone out there hasn't seen this yet, it came out about a year and a half ago. It's been out for a little while, but if anyone likes Texas Chainsaw Massacre out there, come on. I mean, if you're a horror fan, you're going to like it. So I recommend X. You got to see X. It's such an homage to Texas Chainsaw. And then Ty West goes back. He goes back to a prequel called Pearl. There's an old couple in the movie X that's showcased, and they have some sinister motives, so to speak. And we go back to the young life of Pearl and her husband, and when she's a young lady with hopes and dreams and aspirations to be rich and famous and everything, and it doesn't work out. I mean, it's just how it goes. But and then to cap off the trilogy, we jump ahead, which is a sequel to X, Maxine, which showcases Maxine, one of the main protagonists of X. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but I thought Ty West did a great job with this trilogy. A great film series. Especially if you like horror and you like Texas Chainsaw, you can't miss. And then of course, and then you got the gritty 70s X, and then you got the neon soaked 1985 of Maxine, which I think just is such a cool contrast. And again, I ask that you send me your stories at areyoustillafraid13@gmail.com. I am going to wrap this episode up for now. This has been episode 1, Summerween. Until next time.